Blog Talk Radio.
We're playing a song first.
I'm bringing the other callers in. We're going to be live in a second. Hi, John and Don. How are you doing tonight?
Hello.
Fine, thank you very much.
I'm on my land phone, and I have to bury my cell phone, so there's no extra communication. So how is everybody doing tonight?
Excellent. Let's find out with Don. What's going on, Don?
Oh, that just coming home after working till 7:30, and then I've got to be back at 6 in the morning, so I'm kind of preparing to get ready for bed. But other than that, everything is fantastic.
I have a saying, and that is, I've been working like a dog for a dog, and my dog never worked this hard before in its life.
Okay.
How about the hammer? I hear the hammer has been working a lot of hours lately.
The hammer has, and the hammer's down one car.
The hammer has been up and down so much in the last, probably 20 years, but this is as much as I see the hammer going up and down.
I think the hammer met the wrecking ball this week.
18-year-old wrecking ball.
Fate took a hold of me, and it hasn't let go.
How are you
feeling,
by the way? Because you had a little neck, you weren't feeling too well.
Well, I am going to go to the doctor, but I'm going to wait for the insurance company to tell me what I should do first.
Yeah.
What doctor to go to.
That's why.
So I was going to tell you guys tonight's topic, and we can branch out from there. Charles won't be calling till next week's show, okay?
Who's
the topic
Charles?
Is the candidate who was supposed to be calling in tonight from the school board race. I just decided to have him next week instead. The question of the day is why it's easy to commit suicide / Jim Carrey's girlfriend eluding pain and depression. What's the easy way out? And the John told me to premise the show with Jim Carrey's girlfriend who took 3 different kinds of pills to ice herself. But she was a Scientologist, sort of in rehab.
I know just in my own personal life, everyone's wired differently. And some people, they're very me oriented. They would never think of killing themselves. Like, that's because they love their life or what they're about more than anything. I have different kind of wiring. I think when I was around 19, I hit that wall, like a lot of where most suicides happen in that kind of 18 to 22 kind of range. And it would have been very easy to commit suicide. It's something I say I grew out of it, but basically I kind of reasoned my way through how to deal with that. But some people just have the wiring, and maybe you don't have, a person doesn't have the self-worth. It's like, I'm just not worth anything, and I just want to just disappear, vaporize. And there are other consequences to that, spiritual, eternal consequences, I believe. But I'm just saying the wiring in that mind of that person just overwhelms everything else. It's like, I just don't care. And you just want to do it. From what I understand, males are more successful at it because we usually take a gun or something extreme and pull the trigger. Women tend to do the pills overdose thing, which a lot of times is really more attention. They're not really trying to kill themselves. They're trying to show people, like, does anyone care about me? And they overdose and, you know, they get their stomach pumped or they survive it. And but they get the attention that they're looking for. And I think in the end, that's kind of what a person's looking for, is attention, someone to say you have value. Don't do this to yourself. But that's kind of my little soapbox on it. Jane, how do you feel?
I think that, I'm going to say something about the girlfriend, but I've learned to become such a fighter in life through all my adversity that I think it would take a lot for me to kill myself. And I don't think I would do it at this point in my life, because life is a gift and God would give it to us. But I agree with your premise that people, if they are susceptible to suicide, I think it's more between the ages of 18 and 30. And people do it a lot because of impulse or not reaching their goals, or sometimes because of an emotional strain. But I wanted to mention that Jim Carrey's girlfriend was from Ireland, and the funeral will be held in Ireland later this week. So, you know, but she looked like she was healthy looking and looked pretty good, and she just had a birthday a few days ago. So, maybe she just took too many pills. I don't know.
You think? No, I mean, those are both very good assumptions. John had a, this is a deeply mental, as a matter of fact, a miswiring of the brain. It's just something that happens, like being gay or being whatever else, that is either different, deviant, perverse, or other consciousness. You know, the thing is that I deal with people all the time, and always have. And I always come from the premise that everybody's crazy, and then deal with the ones who are only half crazy. And then the half crazy ones are my allies. I know, you know, that I'm crazy, so I don't have a problem with going out with that premise that everybody that I meet is out of their fucking minds. And then all I need to do is find out what it is that they expect and they want, or because in virtually all cases there are a lot of people who don't want anything. So you have to figure out what the ones who want, and then you give them what they want.
You know, I saw in someone's refrigerator this weekend, I don't avoid sanity. I enjoy every minute of it.
one of my favorite bands going through the 70s and 80s is Boston, and they have lead singer Brad Delp. There's 5 to 10, singers, male singers, singers in general that are iconic. Steve Perry from Journey. There's a guy from, I can't believe I'm losing my memory here. It'll come to me. But there's certain guys that throughout time you hear their voice, and it's like, and Brad Delp from Boston was one of those vocalists. And apparently, it's a couple of years back, he had a girlfriend he was living with, and his girlfriend had a sister and that was living with them. He was very close with not only his fiance but his girlfriend's sister, who had a boyfriend. And for whatever reason, a little imagination or curiosity or whatever, he put a hidden camera in her room or in the bathroom or wherever.
Jeez.
And was, basically had a little free peep show. And she found it and confronted him about it with her boyfriend. And they basically told him, listen, we're going to tell your fiancé about this. You better confront her, And he said, okay, listen, I fess up. And he's basically a pretty cool dude. I mean, from all that I've heard and read, he's a cool dude. He's got a little kinky side or whatever, quirky side. Bottom line, he said, give me a couple days and I'll deal with this. And he basically locked the house, put a note on the door, this is dangerous, don't go inside. He had a couple of barbecue pits, set them up to go full tilt, locked himself in the bathroom or wherever, whatever room, and basically carbon monoxidized himself to death. And you sit there and you think, these are people, like he's celebrity. Famous, or Michael Hutchence from In Excess. They find him hanging with a rope in a hotel. And you sit there and you go, these people have everything. Why would you want to end your life?
It's hard
wiring.
To say.
Bad wiring. Mm-hmm. What's happening in a lot of suicide is construed in a lot of different ways around the world. You talk about suicide bombers. They don't consider themselves committing suicide.
So this is like a self-destructive
jihad.
Switch inside to say, I'm not, let me just annihilate myself.
Right. I mean, the thing is that these are, a lot of them are non-spiritual people who don't believe in purgatory. Purgatory is just a waiting room to come back to life and to see if you can do it better, or if it's going to get worse, you're going to be going through more hell in other lives. But if you're going to purgatory, is that worse or better than the idyllic heaven or the infernal of hell? And so people have to judge if purgatory is, in fact, a better place to be. But, for the most part, the wiring in your head, and it can come from many, many different things, but primarily it seems to be, and I used to coach all kinds of sports. And over time, I know of at least 3 of my kids who have committed suicide. And each one of them, I try to remember how they were, so I can see how I might have been able to
affect them. What was the backstory to this leading up to it?
Right. Mm-hmm. And
they had friends on the team that committed suicide?
I had my kids would commit suicide.
You mean on the sports teams?
Yes, of course.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
That happens all the time.
I know kids growing up, you rarely hear 8-year-old kid committed suicide or,
right.
Even 12-year-old kid committed suicide. It's usually in the
sports teams.
So it's kind of this emerging age where you're not talking to mommy and daddy. Because I think there's kind of a safety net. You know, like if you have a problem, it's going to be okay. And you kind of hit a certain point of disillusionment where you're becoming an adult. And a lot of times it really hits you hard when it's like, okay, I'm going from high school to college. And suddenly you're trying to figure out your future. And you've got all these decisions and these pressures that hit you that you've never had before. It's like you're driving the car. You're getting the job. You've got to make things happen. And mommy and daddy, you know, for the next, it's not the next 10 years, oh, mommy and daddy pays for this. And I just sleep in my room. It's all taken care of. It's like you're making these decisions and you're encountering evil and violence and all this stuff. And the point is you're not prepared for it. Like you feel like you're in deep water. It's the ocean's bigger than you of life. And you feel swallowed up and like overwhelmed. Like I just have, you know, it's a total, I bend, I uncle, you know, I wave the white flag and I'm just getting out. And this signal kind of goes off in your mind. I just got to get out of this somehow. Just, I can't deal with it. What's interesting with the suicide is that she took those three empty pill bottles, all prescribed to Jim Carrey under an alias.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so according to, well,
Jim, he's
I mean, it was his pills?
People.
It's his stash that she got into. So, and this is according to TMZ, and you know, they're it's kind of like the National Enquirer if you want to know what the real story. Talk to them, but basically, she was found with Ambien, a sleep aid, Percocet, I guess is how it's pronounced, a painkiller, and a propanolol, a beta blocker. So you can imagine, you know, he's probably got some stuff, you know, meds that he's dealing with, and. So
Jim Carrey is one of the most psycho people out in Hollywood.
Yes.
He's always been, when he came from New York, they were like, oh, the people down in Hollywood were like, oh, no, we got to have
born in Canada, Don.
Right, but he started his career over in New York.
And part of that's, you know, the imagination of, you know, total crazy characters, way over the top, you know,
yeah,
louder,
Jim
bigger
Belushi
than life.
Type. Yeah. The Jim
so it's
Belushi
kind of part
type
of the
schizophrenic and frenetic and the
well, you know, it's not his fault she killed herself.
No,
but
it's
maybe
not,
he
it's
should have been more sensitive when he broke up with her.
What was the age difference? Wasn't there a major age difference?
53 to 30.
Right, so that means that she was very insecure in his world. She didn't feel like she belonged.
She was a makeup artist and aspiring actress.
So you can kind of figure.
Those are the ones who are most secure, the ones who put on 6 inches of makeup and 14 coats of lipstick and have to wear earrings that are the size of.
But she did. She wasn't that glamorous. She was a good. She had natural good looks and an Irish girl.
She's a pretty girl, but I guess kind of the angle I'm taking on this is that you're coming into this world of super celebrity. You know, it's not just like a celebrity. This is an iconic
super
comedian.
Yeah.
And his world is crazy world, and that's how he makes his money. He delves into crazy characters and, you know, spending probably hours in front of a mirror contorting his face and thinking of goofy, silly, you know, just off-the-wall stuff. So that alone, he's walking a tightrope. You know, in other words, it's like he kind of needs to be on suicide watch, you know, just because he's
doing
some dark stuff. And, you know, if you're a normal person and you have someone next to you kill themselves, that's enough to, like, put your head in a blender. I can't even imagine where his mind's at. Really?
My twin sister's husband killed himself a room away from her.
The guitarist in our band, fantastic person, Phil, he's about 22. Like, if you were to pick a kid for your daughter to marry, Phil's the guy. Straight arrow, Christian boy, virtuous, not about money, not materialistic. Does the right thing. You know, I've even talked about musical things. Hey, you could advance if you do this and do that. He's like, that's not where I'm about. His dad's a successful lawyer, about 30 years practice, house in Topanga Canyon, got it all. Mama, devout Christian. Dad, kind of a believe in God, go to church, you know, once a year kind of thing. and just started having some problems with drugs and alcohol and painkiller kind of stuff. And he was very distraught, and he had a couple cases. I think he had a case where he felt he blew it for you know, one of his clients, and it really affected him. And they basically, the wife said, "You need to become Christian, accept Christ." And he did. He did kind of the sinner's prayer, "I accept Jesus" thing in June or so of last year. About a month or two later, and a couple months later, in the summer, family all at home. He went downstairs, got in the closet, put a gun to his head, and blew his brains out. And the house was so well built, they didn't even hear it. So, you know, he's, you know, after a few hours, they're like, "Where's Dad?" I don't know. He looked through the house, and he was in, you know, the closet, dead. That's the kind of stuff that will tweak you around. And, you know, I just have nothing but, you know, prayer and sympathy for anyone going through that, the survivors.
A lot of times it's pain. It's physical pain or it's mental anguish. And
right.
People, you know, they actually contemplate it for a while.
Yes.
And then especially those who are unsuccessful, they substitute, just like all addicts, they substitute, and the next thing they do, they're cutters or
right.
They're pin prickers. Or they, you know, like bondage and discipline, you know, the pain.
I have a friend that will hit her head against the wall or punch
yep.
herself in the face or the side of the head where it maybe doesn't show marks. I'm like, "Listen, can we pick another thing? Grab a box, inanimate object, empty box, punch the crap out of it. You know, take a balloon and pop, whatever. Find something. Don't damage your body. Don't damage your hand. Don't damage your face, your skull. Don't bang that thing around."
But then you've got the others who are compulsive eaters, compulsive smokers, you know, they compulsive drinkers, whatever the case may be.
Right.
You know, drug addicts.
They're blocking their pain with the
right.
food or the. Right now, in this case, you figure, you know, Jim's got, you know, he's got a pain blocker. He's got something to help him sleep. And I think people, you know, kind of even going to the next level, the medical community feeds this. People come in and
oh,
they go,
absolutely.
"I'm having trouble
medical
sleeping." "Oh, I've got the product for you." And it maybe
but
even works for a couple of weeks till your body adjusts to that. And
no,
then you
the
have
medical
to
community, they persuade it.
Yes.
They actually need to be, and that's what I always tell everybody, why in the world does everybody complain? If they complain, why we won't need doctors, we won't need hospitals, we don't need police, we won't need fire, we won't need anything if these people stop complaining. So they want you to complain so that they can have job security.
Right, and kind of in the, you know, it's interesting, at some level, when you have a dead body from a suicide, at some level there's usually something like with drugs or alcohol involved, either before or during or after, you know, I mean, in that process, it's a part of that mix. And in most of the cases, like in my case, I didn't do any drugs, I don't drink, nothing like that. So my mind, even though I had that wire tripping, I had a clear mind. What would I have done if I was on a drinking binge, if I was hanging out with my buddies and popping pills and amphetamines and this and that and the downers to, you know, all this stuff? That changes the whole game. It's like now that's a different loop. I could have walked down that. Instead, with me, it was a logical process. I walked through the whole thing. It's like, you know, this is how I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to be dead, and they're going to go to my funeral, then they're going to leave. Everyone's going to cry for, you know, a while, and then they move on to their lives. And I'm going to be dead and possibly burning in hell. And at the very worst, I'm going to count to God. He's going to go, "Why did you do this? You know, why did you end your life?" I'm going to go, "Well, because I was a dumbass." Or at the other end of it, I don't exist at all and nothing. The point is, it's like I choose life. And I had a clear enough brain to go that direction. But if you'd mixed in, you know, some chemical abuse, who knows what I'd done.
Well, the thing is that I think I just wanted to mention that there's an opposite to that too. Those who are doing the drugs know that they're going to be able to do the drugs, and so they won't commit suicide. Hmm. It's those ones, it's the people who've seen, I seem to see more of, who are actually not drug addicts. That's in their mind. Their head is just on its own. It's out of whack.
Can I read a couple of verses?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Romans 12:2, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good, acceptable, and perfect to the will of God. 1 Corinthians 3:16, know you not that you are a temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells within you? 1 Corinthians 3:17, if any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. This is the King James Version, so it's kind of rocky. If you were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which is God's. That's about it.
That's nice. I think there was scripture too, as I've gotten older, I like Bible answers. Sometimes things get really intense, and some things are black and white, and sometimes things get into a gray area. Like, I'll give an example, like in the case of my brother Phil, you know, his father said the sinner's prayer. He came to Jesus after years of not being committed to it. Now he gets in with Jesus. But he's also got meds for his pain. So he's kind of mixing, you know, you're mixing some God and stuff, and then you're mixing meds. It's making a little loopy. And then maybe, you know, I have to tell you this. I talk a lot to people that are, you know, homeless, because I ride a bike through. So anytime I stop to get anything in the store, 7-Eleven late at night, or, you know, get a burger, whatever, you're going to run into a homeless person or street person, and they'll start talking, hey, brother, what's going on? And, you know, you try not to get enemies, so sometimes I'm social, like, hey, what's going on? They'll tell me their story. I have to say, I think with homeless people that are on Skid Row or down and out, probably 80-90% of them, you know, grew up in churches, or they can quote Bible verses, you know, they quote half the Bible by memory. And I think when you bottom out and you have a certain spirituality, there's nothing left. And I think those people crash harder. Just because if you can't deal with your problems and you have God, you know, you lose all faith, all hope.
Well, that's what I meant by people don't understand some of the Bible's tenets about purgatory, the progression. You know, if you commit suicide, your soul is going, in spirit is going to generally, and this is all if it actually works this way, it's going to be sitting until it comes back to earth, and they will have to go through the same or similar pain and suffering as they did while they were here during the time that they, you know, before the time they committed suicide. So they're relegating themselves to the same kind of pain and suffering that they had, and they don't understand that if they go by, you know, if they believe in the Christianity.
Well, it's a little backstory too on this, and of course I'm not Jim Carrey's friend and don't hang out with him, so I take it for what it's worth. But apparently one of the big deals, because it does say it was well known, they were off and on a lot, and basically she was heavy into Scientology, and he didn't want to marry a Scientologist. That's understandable. So, you know, he's in his wacky world, and you got someone coming in from another world that's can be very wacky from the
that's
outside.
That's a wacky world too, yeah, that's wacky.
Yeah, so you got double whack going on here. And yeah, he doesn't want to get married. You know, gal wants to get married. You know, it wouldn't matter if Jim Carrey was the devil.
Do you know if she wanted to get married?
Women, all women want to get married.
Pretty
very
much.
Few exceptions to that. A woman wants to know from the first day you meet her, so what are we now? You know, a guy would just go, hey, we had a date or we had fun and, you know, I'll see you later. So what are we now? Are we boyfriend-girlfriend? And then if you're boyfriend-girlfriend, then are we fiancé, you know, whatever? Are we going to get married? And that's the and it, it that's the whole goal. There's no other goal in the thing. It's like it's not just to hang around and have fun. There's exceptions to that, but most gals are wired that way, in my experience.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something I saw in an article. It says the Bible does not seem to condemn suicide. There are 6 accounts of suicide in the Bible, the most notorious being those of King Saul. I'll just read it up quick. 1 Samuel 31, Judas, Matthew 27, Abimelech in Judges, Samson in Judges, Ahithophel in 2 Samuel 17, and Zimri in 1 Kings. As far as I can tell, none of these 6 is explicitly condemning for taking his life. Some say suicide cannot be forgiven because the person who did it could have not repented before doing it. But all of us commit sins that we are too spiritually cloddish to recognize for the sins that they are. And we all die with sins not named and repented of. That's it.
That's true. I mean, that means we have a secret. All of us have to take a secret to the grave with us. But, you know, for the most part, this is not... If you are doing this either because you're in pain, you've thought about it, and you've had a chance to be pre-repentant, if you will. So I don't know if that counts or not.
I think it does. I think I'll give you an example because I deal with this a lot in church where people talk about eternal security. They talk about once saved, always saved. They talk about can you lose your salvation? And I say, no, I don't think you can lose your salvation. No, I don't think once you become God's child, like you accept Jesus as your Savior or you have repent or you become born again, I don't think you lose that. But I said, it's like a family. I said, understand, there are people in my family that they're not family anymore because of their behavior, you know, because of the way they will not interact and walk in the room and work with the program. They're rebels, and they're good, and they know what the standards are with mom and dad, or with the family, or with the uncle, and they choose to be rebellious. I mean, totally defiant. And there's a certain point. I think we all have this in the family where they go, you know, so and so's not welcome in here. Like, unless they change or how they're going to be, they're not welcome in my house. You know, heaven's not just this open frat house. Well, you just come in and you bring a keg of beer and you're in. It's like God has a high moral code. So I think as far as when you talk about unrepentant sin, I think you're not – if you – say you tell a white lie, I don't think God's going to kick you out of heaven. But there are certain consequences when you try to enter the kingdom and you've got major rebellion in your life that God's dealt with it, and it's an issue of like, no, I'm not going to change. And same thing is like, how'd you get here? Well, I killed myself. I rejected the life you gave me. I said, it's not good enough and I'm not going to follow. I mean, that's the major, I'm not following your path of obedience here. So
that's
a really
good point.
That's a high risk card to take out of the deck and go, you know, just let me shuffle the deck here. Let's see what happens with this. Let's just roll the dice. And I'm not saying I'm God. I don't know how he judges everyone. I'm glad I'm not. But I'm just saying I would not advise anyone to take that risk and find out. Let's see what happens when you get there. Not with that one. That's just not, I don't think it's going to fly with God. You know, like, how'd you get here? I took the life you gave me because I didn't think it was worth living, really.
So do you think one time a few months, about a year ago, I went into my life insurance company mm-hmm. when I was depressed, and I said, if this person dies by suicide, will the policy still be paid out?
Right.
And they said, yes, because we're a community and a brotherhood.
What insurance policy is that?
And there how do
no
I get it?
There is no insurance policy in freaking the Western world.
It's Lutheran. It's the formerly known as Lutheran Brotherhood, and their new name is Thrivent.
Oh, and by the way, glad you asked, because in the case of my brother Phil, it was covered, his suicide. And I don't know when he got it or what the circumstances are, but
did your brother Phil kill himself?
No, I'm not my physical. I'm speaking as a musical brother. My
the one you described earlier.
Yes, and his family was taken care of through his insurance policy, and I don't know the fine print.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a trip.
And it wasn't
Don,
something he probably got a year ago. I mean, it's probably something he's had.
Don,
for, you
know,
you're
not planning anything, are you?
I would no, oh, no. This is too beautiful a life to even consider suicide in any form.
He's got more spirit babies. He's got to hatch out here. He's this man.
Oh yeah,
working. Don't
if
put limitations on my brother.
Don, if life is beautiful, will you buy me a Lamborghini?
Sure. I think I didn't I buy one for you already?
No.
And you crashed it.
No, you never bought me a car.
You want a confession of the cruelest thing you can tell a woman?
What?
When I got married, my wife, my beautiful, lovely wife, always wanted a house.
Okay.
And I'm not materialistic, right? So I'm kind of like, you know, hey, I want it, but, you know, I'm not going to jump off a bridge to get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we tried the first couple years to work a deal with my folks. They didn't quite have the money together. Her dad had the money, but he's got two other daughters. So, it, you know, like, he can't show favoritism because he'd have to buy them all houses, right? So
no.
Every time we,
hell no. What in the world kind of person is that?
I'm just saying that's how the game played. So the point is, we went through the whole process. You go to the bank and they look at your statements and they go, we need this, and you know, and if we make a little more money, and oh, if we have a bigger down payment, and oh, if we get a house in the right area with a lower, you know, mortgage rate, blah blah blah, we'll qualify. Go through the whole dance, and it always came down to, like, the parents, her parents were always like, yes, go go go, and then when it came down to the real, hey, we need the check, it was just like, I can't do it. So it's kind of like Lucy with the football pulling it, and Charlie Brown's trying to kick it, and off he falls on his back, and he does it every time. So we went through this a couple times, and finally I said, you know, hey, we had one of those games. It was like, I don't know, Monopoly kind of. I don't think it was exactly Monopoly, but it was a game like that where you get little houses and things. And so I said, we were at my folks' house. I said, listen, I want to tell you something. And I said, and when we went outside and we were walking in the field there, and I said, you know, my dad and I talked about it, and we're going to put this together. You know, I got you a house. And she was like, you're kidding me. I said, nope, I got a house for you. She's like, oh, she's all excited, and it's like, and, you know, I'm a clownster, so, right, so I pull out of my pocket this little Monopoly house, you know, this little plastic thing. I said, here it is.
I don't think that's too funny.
Well, when you're 25 years old and you're in a band and, you know, all this stuff.
It sounds like,
you know,
it sounds like it's hilarious. Yeah.
I was just stupid.
It's hilarious.
And I was just clowning. It was like, hey, there's your house. I got your house. You know, because we're young, and I figure in the next 5 years we're going to make it happen. And I didn't think it through. And yeah, you're right. It fell really flat, and she cried and all that stuff. You know, and it's like, okay, no more jokes about the house.
No more house jokes.
But the thing is, okay, in that moment I was the Jim Carrey, right? I'm the clown guy. I'm not taking life that seriously. And the problem you run into is when you're in a relationship or partnership, they have different wiring and different responses. So if you're the control person and you're running the show, you're thinking everyone's on board and they're going to react the same way. It's like, well, no, you know, the joke doesn't always land right with your partner. And that's what happened now. As I found
out.
Well,
yeah, that shouldn't have taken. I mean, that is too, that's one of those too good to be true situations where I don't care who it is, then you're not going to get a house.
She was gullible, too, you know. She's like, oh, Johnny, you'll make it all work, you know. So, and that was,
right,
that
exactly.
was the rush of it all. Like, oh, she's going to, you know, she fell. It was perfect line and sinker. That's the problem. It was just too perfect, you know. It totally took the air out of her. And after that, it's like, okay, no more. I'm not going to go down that path.
Exactly. Leave that alone.
That is a sacred cow.
That's a little dangerous. Yeah, that's a little dangerous. You're messing with people's lives there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, their entire life. You're not just they're pulling a prank. So this is something that people have to be careful of when they are determining the other person's mental capacity. You know, that borders on, in fact, bullying or
right.
some form of verbal, mental abuse. You know, that's what that borders on. That. So,
I have a friend that they're inexperienced. And they admire me, and I could say, you know, hey, rookie, listen. You know, they'll do something stupid, and they get really upset. Like, why is he upset? Like, it's like, I'm on the, you know, when I grew up, you're playing ball. It's like, hey, here's the kid. Here's the rookie. Here's the new kid. You know, you're the newbie. You get that all the time when you're starting a job or whatever. So, to me, it's like, you're one of the guys. You're one of the team. And she just hate it. I'm like, why are you hating it? I mean, you know, it's like, it's just like initiation. You're part of my team. So there's going to be a point where you're not the rookie anymore. You're learning. But right now you're making rookie mistakes. So I want you to, you know, not take it so seriously. But it was having the opposite effect. They were taking it too seriously. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to touch the rookie thing. Leave it alone.
I wanted to read you guys the six kinds of suicides from the Bible.
No, you said Samson committed suicide. I never knew that.
Yeah,
in a way he did.
I didn't,
because he knew he was going to kill him. He knew he was going to kill all these other people when he hit the pillar. So I could see it's kind of like suicide with a purpose.
Samson first, okay?
Uh-huh.
This is like a jihad kind of, you know.
Judges 16:26-30. Then Samson said to the boy who was holding his hand, "Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them." Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there. And about 3,000 men and women were on the roof looking on while Samson was amusing them. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, "O Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me just this time, that I may at once be avenged for the Philistines for my two eyes." Samson grabbed the two middle pillars on which the roof rested and braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the one with his left. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and on the people who were in it. So the dead who he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed in his life. That's kind of strange.
Well, you know, it's interesting about that in a way, because it's almost like, you know, when you go into battle, you know that you're at risk, and you know, if you're the first one running out there, you're probably going to get it compared to the guy at the back of the line. So I would say in this case, he asked God for the strength to do it, and his strength wasn't his. It wasn't just, you know, natural strength. It was a divine thing. So I would say of all the suicides, you know, I don't think he's going to have the same consequence. I think because God's like, hey, yeah, take him out. You know, make a statement here. As compared to Judas, who betrayed Jesus.
I'm not going to read every suicide. I'm just going to read the weird one about the fire. But I found another one. 1 Kings 19:3-4. "And he was afraid and arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die and said, It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's." So that one's about legacy.
Now he requested, but he didn't die. I mean, he didn't.
And I don't know who he was.
Is that Elijah?
It was 1 Kings 19. I can look it up later.
I think it's Elijah or Elisha, I think it was one of the...
Okay, I'm going to read one more and then I'll stop. I can't find the fire one right now. Jeremiah 20, cursed be the day when I was born. Let the day not be blessed when my mother bore me. Cursed be the man who brought the news to my father, saying, a baby boy has been born to you, and made him very happy. But let the man be like the cities when the Lord overthrew without relenting, and let him hear an outcry in the morning and a shout of the alarm at noon. Because he did not kill me before birth, so that my mother would have been my grave and her womb ever pregnant, why did I ever come forth from my womb to look on trouble and sorrow, so that my days have been spent in shame? That's more like a lamentation.
Yeah. But that's not specific suicide. That's just a
maybe we
suicide.
Should talk about how people overcome sadness.
Well, one thing I ran into, and that is you know how sometimes you'll come up with an idea or a thought or a saying, and then you see someone use it in a, you know, major, like a company or a movie or whatever. For years, I often wonder subliminally, was it just I was on the same conscious line, or did I talk to someone who talked to someone who talked to someone? Because I used to say for years, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I remember a couple years back, there was a movie and they had that in there. I'm like, man, I wonder if someone talked to, you know, or if it's just a common thought that everyone has out there. But I always tell people that, you know, it just once you realize it's a permanent solution to a, you know, a temporary problem, tomorrow you wake up and you go, hey,
no,
I'm not at that
no.
space.
No, you can be at a better, worse space. That's the thing about the mental. That's the thing about mental illness, is that it is like drugs. It is, you are impaired. You don't know what is real and what's not. A person who's got suicide on their mind has suicide on their mind at 13, and they'll have suicide on their mind at 35. And they very easily might have suicide on their mind at 65.
True.
So
you mean like they don't forget about it?
Oh, hell no. This is a chronic thing. This is something that is a battle every day, just like drugs. If anybody's been an addict or anything like that, you know, they'll know that the only thing that they can do is positive self-speak and making sure they eat right, because half of the time it's imbalanced nutrition.
Yeah.
But just everything is in it, isn't it? Imbalance, and the only way you can really get over it is with the Trinity. You have to have your mind, body, and spirit taken care of. If you don't take care of those, it's going to cause an imbalance, and it causes an imbalance in your brain chemistry, and that's when suicidal tendencies are more prevalent than they already could be.
But there's also people that have different levels of addiction. You know, some people, example, there's millions of people that drink, and there's other people that are alcoholics. There's other people that are just flat out there's no way out for them. Like, they cannot stop, they cannot rehab, they're just going to go the full distance. And I guess that's what I'm kind of saying. There's some people, like, they hit a phase where they're young, or they go through a divorce at 35 or 40, they go through a crisis, and they're very vulnerable at that point, and then they get through it, and they go the rest of their life, they never kill themselves. Or they go, you know, 30 or 40 years of their life, never attempt it, and then one day, boom, something triggers it, and off they go. And the point I'm saying is, if they get past that, or they get the spiritual connection or whatever, they're like they sort out their diet, they get off meds, whatever, they can go through it. There's other people, when you start talking about wiring, they just every day, they think about it. It's their destination in life. And I remember the Family Feud. It was hosted by Ray Coombs, I think. And he was very depressed and suicidal, and he tried to kill himself, and he went through the whole program, and he got out, and then he went and killed himself after. You know, like, he was just, that was like his date was with death, you know, with suicide. That was his destiny. He just could not get away from that. So I can agree to that point, but I think there are some people, you just got to get through it, you know, and it's not that at that level of addiction like a drug addict. You know, some people can take a couple drinks and walk away. Some people can't. Lord, have mercy on the person who can't, you know.
I had to step away a minute.
Wow.
I found the verse, 1 Kings 16. I found the fire one. I'll just read this last one. Now the troops were encamped against Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, and the troops who were encamped heard, Zimri has conspired and he has killed the king. Therefore all Israel made Omri, the commander of the army, king over Israel that day in the camp. So Omri went up from Gibbethon, and all Israel went with him, and they besieged Tizra. And when Zimri saw the city was taken, he went into the citadel of the king's house and burned the king's house over him with fire and died. Because of his sins which he committed, doing evil in the sight of the Lord, walking in the way of Jeroboam, and his sin which he committed, making Israel to sin. Now the rest of the acts of Zimri and the conspiracy which he made, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So it sounds like he killed himself because of shame, and his name was Zimri.
No, he's not related to Bob Dylan, is he?
No.
Zimmerman?
But I forgot to tell you guys, guess what Lauren found at the funeral?
A new girlfriend.
A long-lost brother. His father, Sam, fathered a child the same year as Lauren. Lauren's 3 months older than his brother, Emerson.
So how do you feel about that? You want to commit suicide?
No, I just think that Lauren's dad was a player.
A player?
That's
that
putting it lightly.
I haven't seen him in 18 years.
That's the same year, three months.
A three-month time difference. And we found out he has another brother named Alexander, which we didn't know about either.
I guess he was just firing that thing as quick as he could reload it, huh?
Well, that's natural, John. Come on, but bottom line. But bottom line is that the ladies didn't know it.
Hey, I admire his work. I'm not.
I'm not hating. I talked to the mother of Emerson too. She was nice.
I bet she was.
We have similar stories, but I don't want to go into the, the detail.
Apparently.
That's all right. But for mental illness, we just have to make sure that when our children are growing up, the parents have to see what it is. Because about half the time it's bipolarism, it's adrenal problems, gland problems, hormonal problems that can be fixed. And that's the problem, is that it can be fixed either holistically or with medication, but it can be fixed. And it's the parents' job to notice the tendencies and make sure that they nip it in the bud. And that's, I mean, I'm from what I understand, it could be up to 60 to 70% of all potential suicides can be medically cared for. That's a huge percentage.
That means people have to go for help.
Yes, they have to notice it first, and then they have to be able to go to help. And the help comes in many, many forms, and that could be individual attention or group therapy out inpatient, something else that might be out there, but there are many places they can go for help.
And you have to, I think, it is an issue of faith. Or in other words, if you give up hope, yeah, you want to kill yourself. It's like, oh, I can't deal with this. You know, I see no answer. When you have a situation where there's pain or loss or whatever it is, and you feel there's no answer, because if you feel there's an answer out there, you want to hang around. I want to see tomorrow. You know, I got a great girlfriend. I got this job, or I'm excited about my health, my body, or whatever. But when you feel this depression or angst or whatever it is, and you don't have a solution for it, it's overwhelming. So
it's overwhelming, exactly.
And you know, so when you lose your faith, so faith is a very important thing. Whether you believe in yourself or you believe in God or whatever it is, or you believe in the pill you're taking, you got to have faith at some level. We're spiritual beings. And the problem is when you try to isolate us and just make us intellectual animals or whatever with no soul, you know, you're going to run into issues, and we have to have faith, you know. So to kind of say, you know, can, you know, 70 or 80% of these people be helped? Yes. I have to have that faith. I have to have the faith that, you know, 100%, you know. And I know there are people that will not accept it, or they'll go down a dark path, but I believe there's hope for everyone. And I think we had a show a couple of weeks ago where we were a little bit in a negative slant, like, okay, the United States is done, our government's shot, there's no help, everything's going to hell. And that's true at some level, but I still have faith. I still have faith because we don't have anarchy yet in the streets. I still go down, you know, go to the store, pick up some food. Life is still good, you know. Is the glass half empty? Yes. Is the glass half full? Yes. It's both. I'm choosing to look at the full side. There's plenty of empty out there. I'm not going to deny it. I'm just choosing what's productive for my focus. So I encourage you, Jane, no matter what, you know. And I always, you know that joke I always say, it's not as bad as you think it is. It's worse. You know, people chuckle.
Right.
And it's like, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to say, like, loosen up. Don't take it so seriously, because you never know what's around the corner. It could hit you worse. What are you going to do? Are you going to fold it up? Like, no. It's like, I can deal with anything, is really the spirit of what I'm trying to say when I say that.
Well, just remember that it would help if you were real Christians, or any, when I say you, I mean anybody out there in the listening audience. If you're real Christians, you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to develop that balance, because that will stop a lot of the pain there. Pain, you know, comes from disillusionment and dissatisfaction. And if you're dissatisfied with your spiritual integrity, or your mental acuity, or your physical being, then you are definitely in a depression, potential for some kind of bipolarism, and that could easily be just one step away from being mentally debilitated or in fact, suicidal. You have
to
take care of
the Rolling Stones had a hit. I can't get no satisfaction.
Satisfaction, that's right.
That was their that signature hit, and that was a kind of a theme song of kids in Vietnam. How did these young, healthy kids with a great future, you ship them off to war, they come back, you know, after a tour of duty, and it's like they're drug addicts living in the street, can't cope with life.
Well, that's what I'm talking about in terms of the leadership and things that war brings about. War, and our leaders already know it, they just call it collateral damage, but war is the new welfare class. And you've heard me mention this before, that the soldiers that are coming back here, and I don't care what grade level they are, they're coming back completely mentally debilitated, and they can't help us at all, because the only thing that they trained for is killing. And a regular civilization, quote unquote, is supposed to be for going killing. Mm-hmm. If you're a civilized civilization.
Right.
If you're not, then go ahead and keep on killing. Let everybody have guns, shoot each other. You know, at college campuses and movie theaters seems to be the killing field of du jour. And so, you know, we just keep on doing that. And like I said, a lot of people don't have a problem with it because getting rid of all these people is primarily what, you know, people like the Koch brothers and everybody want. They want that to happen.
Well, it's disturbing that our culture is entertains itself with death, and you see it in a show. For some reason, you have some kind of movie or TV show, people don't feel resolution until the bad guy gets killed. You know, we can't just work it out, can't talk it out, can't just arrest him, and you know, it's a boring ending. Well, he got arrested, and he's going to go to jail. It's like, no, at the end, he faced off. They said a couple catchphrases to each other, and the bad guy got blown away. Now that's a happy ending. Well, in a movie, that works. But in real life, to seriously kill someone, you know, the impact that emotionally, or is anyone wired to just walk away from that and say, okay, now let's move on to dinner time with the family and say the prayer, and off we go. It's like we're not wired for that kind of stuff, I think.
But we do it all the time. That's what war is about. War is about death and killing and especially rape. You know, the military has that as one of its major battle I don't know what they call it in terms of I'm having a brain freeze, my own dang self. Thanks, John. Where it's part of their battle plan, their stratagem is to rape. They've actually got it, you know, written down that
if it happens, don't ask, don't tell, kind of thing.
Our troops were told to look the other way while the Afghan men were raping their boys and everything. So, you know, this is an everyday occurrence, and it's no big deal. So I don't understand, in a lot of ways, why people make it such a big deal. Because that is their culture. That's the way that they do things. They rape little boys. That's, you know, the priesthood. They just had a gay priest come out with his lover who had met the Pope, and now the Pope has more or less the body that fired him. And he said he thought he would get fired, but they fired him from his, he had an administrative post. And now he's still going to be just a priest. So he's still in the church. So what is that saying? It's saying that, okay, I guess that you can't have a homosexual high up in the priesthood, but you can have all the homosexual priests you want. And that's perfect for them because 99.9% are probably homosexual. So that's no big deal. You know, the destruction of the Bible is happening in our face as we know it. So you guys are going to have to start learning a new King Donald version. I'll call it that. So we'll have to.
I can't handle that.
Right. The King Don version. I kind of like that. I think it's kind of neat. Oh, maybe not. Okay. But you guys, there's going to be a newer version coming out.
As long as he doesn't have Trump as the last name.
No, it won't. It's not mine. Oh, Donald
I know,
Trump.
Duh.
He learned everything from me. What are we talking about here? But
wow.
Going an hour, and Don has to work tomorrow. So can we end the show tonight? Because I'm traumatized from my weekend events.
No, I'm proud of you for making it this long. So, you know, we didn't stray tonight and kept pretty much on task. So.
We were on point.
And then I did what
and
you guys
white
said.
People,
and
white people
I didn't
weren't
mention,
to blame.
I was just going to say, I I'm listening to your suggestion, and I'm not saying that anybody's in the pressure today.
So white people are not responsible for all suicides.
I didn't say that. I said I wouldn't say that on the show. You know that that's my standard answer to everything. Yeah,
you hear about hideous creatures.
You brought it up. I was leaving it alone.
You know what?
Yeah, he's a good boy.
Before
then.
We do our conclusion, there was a black choral group at the funeral. I want to play. It's only 1 minute long, so I'm going to play the song just a second. It's an old Negro spiritual. Just like, here
okay.
I go. I'm going to play it quick just to boost the audience, and we'll go back to our conclusion.
Boost the audience.
Boost the audience.
That's it.
Wow.
It's a group that goes around and sings at funerals.
Are they Jamaican?
No, they're Africans.
Okay, they're Afrikaans. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Liberians. They're Liberians.
Yeah, I as a matter of fact, last night I went to the Nigerian... what was it? The Nigerian Association of Northern Nevada. They had their 50th anniversary or 55th anniversary for Nigerian independence. I wanted to mention that to you because it was quite a spiritual happening. They were all Christian and they were all very, very devout, and they all blessed everything, especially. You know, Nigeria and the United States for being their new home, and the lawyers and everybody. I mean, several prayers and songs to them. So this was quite an eye-opening situation for me because I didn't understand the depth of their Christianity, and it seems to be whole. And pervasive to those who were in attendance. So I was impressed. I just wanted to mention that.
I think we get jaded by things in the news and the press and negativity and things like that. It's refreshing when you see someone like a newborn Christian. You see people of different faiths from different places. I ran into someone that came in from another country in Korea, and they're just talking about their faith and how God answered their prayer, how they were like Buddhist before, and they had a conversion, and it's just like it was so refreshing. It encouraged me, it helped restore my faith, because you see all this stuff going on in this world, and to see their just the simplicity of their joy and peace. And I don't know.
And that's what I've been saying about the differences. And I'm not going to mention any names, but you know, there is a peace to being to know you're loved, and not having to go out and not having to go out and make your love.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge difference between that And people who are not spiritual any longer, they are going out and making their love, and it's artificial love, and it just doesn't work. But
mm-hmm.
people who have a natural, innate, instinctual love, and who just let it come, right over them, they're the people who are less stressful, less
right.
stressed.
And I've seen people.
I'm
not a feelings kind of person. I'm more intellectual kind of work. I mean, try to reason through things. And that's one of my. It's a strength. It's also a weak spot. You know, because I'm not into the emotional, just jump on the boat thing. But I will tell you, when you meet someone that's very sincere and innocent and God fearing, there is something about that that is just wow. It is, you can't, it's like pure water, you know. It's like fresh air after being in smog and pollution and dirt. And there's just a purity about it that you just, you know, that is priceless. You can't put a price on it.
And that's something that when people meet me, I will be me. And when that happens, Jane already knows I come off. People either love me or they hate me. There is no in between. And so, you know, for the most part, I just come out and I say my thing. As I said, Donald Trump learned from me. I wasn't kidding. Some things. You know, bottom line is that we don't mince words. We don't look to be politically correct. And
mm-hmm.
people find that. They find that refreshing.
Yeah, because
there's so many people who are trying to be nice, and nice doesn't cut. There is not a nice person I know who's a millionaire. I don't know any nice millionaires. I know nice appearing. Their facade is nice.
Right.
But in the real world, when you've actually seen them. At work,
they're
doing their thing.
Yeah. It's kill or be killed.
There is no knife.
Oops,
well,
I accidentally turned John's song on early.
To that point, because I was thinking about this, when you think about abilities, you know, like say, okay, let's get a job, you know, Don, John, and Jane. And you go, okay, well, what can we do? Well, I want you to work in the store and fix the shelf or sell this or do that. In general, some people are exceptional. I mean, there's some people like, let's go sing. There's some people like Celine Dion or whatever. They have certain skill levels that are above most people.
Yeah,
you know, there's certain musicians, performers that are like brilliant, or like an athlete. Okay, this guy can run a 10-second 100-meter, and I could run a 13 or something like that. But the point is, it's not like he can run 30 times faster than me. He runs 10%, or 15%, or 5%. And that 5% is like that difference between making a gazillion dollars and getting paid for it, and me just talking about sports. But the bottom line is, what I'm saying is that. When you get into that realm of people who make millions of dollars, very few people are really rocket scientists. It's usually, he was born a Rockefeller, or he connected with the right people. He moves this, it's not like, he shows up and this guy knows stuff that I could never, ever think of. It's like, no, he's, buy 30 of this, sell here. I know this person. They got the connection. And they're just leveraging. And so what I'm saying is that rich people are just people in better position. Like, they're next to the ocean. I'm on the outside trying to get there, and they own their little piece of land, and you can't get there because they've put all the laws and the fences, and now there's this higher lifestyle, and I'm stuck in this kind of rut here. I'm speaking economically. And people that are rich, forget that. It's like, you're just there. Like, remember where you came from or where you could be. In a concentration camp, the rich were no different than the poor. You're just a dude. You're not some super. Go ahead.
And that's what's coming. That's exactly what's coming, is that the purposeful decline, or if you want to call it that, destruction of the monetary funds the monetary system as we know it is going to push everybody into the same boat, the same community, and we're going to really see then who is whose friend and believes in the Lord, because we're all going to be living in, you know, fighting for the same food off the shelf.
Right.
We're going to end the show with John's song, Sorry, so let's do our conclusions now.
All right. Go ahead, John, or I can... I mean, basically, all I wanted to do is say, you know, depression is mental. It is comprised of many, many things, hormonal, genetic... Your diet, those are the things that determine your mental state. Take care of yourself, believe in balance, believe in the Trinity, live that way so that you can alleviate a lot of mental stress.
Go ahead.
Oh, John, I'll go second because you always give good conclusions, so I'll go second. I learned this weekend that after getting my car totaled, that I have a threshold of what I can handle, and I crossed that threshold, and I realized I have some kind of anxiety disorder, because I wasn't I was unable to cope with everything that was going on this week and being thrust into a situation where I had to ask for people for rides. Then being at a house and a funeral where there was over 100 people there during the day. And then I had it was just kind of crazy. So I just know that I have a breaking point where I can't handle much more. I don't know what it would be like for me if I was in something like Hurricane Katrina. I definitely have to be on meds if I was on if I was in something like Hurricane Katrina, I'd have to go on some kind of anti-anxiety depression pills.
Wow.
Well, you wouldn't be the only one, but see, again, that's where you might be able to work with it by just changing or maintaining a good diet. I mean, you did.
Well, I had a salad last night, but I've been in one earthquake. I've been in two earthquakes, one hurricane, and one superstorm, and that's about all I can handle. I'm done with life. I want easy street now.
Well, you used to be a Hurricane Jane.
Yeah, the Hurricane Jane. Well, I've been.
You know,
with,
I used to be exciting. Now I'm kind of boring.
But I think you were confusing chaos with excitement. Like, okay, I'm going to. Disruptive,
that's because I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, and I grew up in a family that produces chaos.
There you go. Bingo.
I already know what my problems are, Adur. All right, John,
yeah.
What's your conclusion?
My conclusion is, as usual, follow the truth where it leads you, and it's not found in a bottle. It's not found in a needle. It's not found in a rope around your neck. Not found in any of those escape.
Is it found in a prescription bottle?
For some people, maybe temporarily, but the problem always is the medication wears off, and it doesn't change reality.
And you need 3 different medication bottles, not just one.
Right. So it doesn't cure the problem. It just covers up the pain. It masks it. It disorients your perception of the truth. The truth is still always what it is. It's not going to change. It's just your perception of how you view it.
Exactly. Very good.
So follow the truth. Don't hide it.
Wait, I have a good ending to this show. Can you guys talk for 1 minute while I find it?
Sure.
I will play you.
You're going to find a good ending. That's,
no,
that
Toby Maguire
sense.
And Wonder Boys, he listed all suicides alphabetically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play that clip, and then I'll play John's song. Here we go.
Mr. Crabtree was saying how George Sanders killed himself, only he couldn't remember how. Phil's, April 25th, 1972, in a Costa Brava hotel room.
How comprehensive of you.
James is amazing. He knows all the movie suicides. Go ahead, James.
There are so many.
Well, just a few, the big ones.
Pierre Angeli, 1971 or 72, also pills. Donald Redberry shot himself in 1980. Charles Boyer, 1978, pills again. Charles Butterworth, 1946, I think, in a car. Supposedly it was an accident, but, you know, he was distraught. Dorothy Dandridge, pills, 1965. Albert Decker, 1968, he hung himself. He wrote his suicide note in lipstick on his stomach. William Inge, carbon monoxide, 1973. Carol Landis, pills again, I forget when. George Reeves, Superman on TV, shot himself. Gene Seberg, pills, of course, 1979. Everett Sloan, he was good, pills. Margaret Sullivan, pills. Lupe Velez, a lot of pills. Gig Young, he shot himself and his wife in 1978. There are tons more.
I haven't heard of half of them.
You did them alphabetically.
It's just how my brain works, I guess.
That was a clip from Wonder Boys.
Wow.
George Reeves killed himself, Superman.
Yes, Superman.
And Dorothy Dandridge.
Did he use, like, a kryptonite bullet when he... Probably not. Mercy.
Katie Holmes, my favorite actress, is in that movie too. Okay, well, let's play.
And I have to say, one of my, you know, because I'm morbid, or I like sick jokes and things. So, you know, because I don't take things that seriously. I think I'd jump off a bridge if I did. I mean, one of the funniest ones to me was, like, you know, how did Bill Bixby die? And I love Bill Bixby. He did the Incredible Hulk. You know, he was Bruce Banner. And
was he in the movie, in a kids' TV show?
Well, he used to be, was it the something dad. It was like, let me tell you about my best friend.
It was in that TV show with Jodie and Buffy.
But
was
well,
that, no, that was Keith, the David Keith or Keith something.
David Carradine.
And I think David Carradine. Yeah, well, there's Keith Carradine and David Carradine, right? One's the karate kung fu guy.
Right, but, David. David committed suicide.
Yeah, because he had cancer, and, you know, I'm sure he probably saw the end. And again, you lose hope, right? I'm going to suffer a lot of pain, and I got a gun here. Same thing like, you know, Robin Williams. You go, why would you kill yourself? It's like, well, his life was being sharp and witty, and now he's going to hit this thing where he's going to lose his mind. You know, he's not going to, and it's going to gradually deteriorate. So what's the logical conclusion? Well, I still got my wits about me. I'm just going to take the quick way out, you know. I don't know if
You know California's getting ready to vote on assisted suicide.
Yes, euthanasia, right?
Right.
I have a friend, she's like 21, 22. She wrote a whole thing about it, and she's like in favor of it. And she's a Christian. She's like, hey, you know, you want to, you know, speed the process up. I'm like, okay, but, you know, you're kind of dealing with thou shalt not kill. You're kind of tweaking around with it, you know. It's like, I really think that, what do you say about the courageous person who lives their life with pain? Like, at what level of pain? Like, okay, I broke my leg. I guess it's time to kill myself. I can't deal with rehab or not being able to run as fast as I used to. There's certain levels you go, like, well, wait a second. Until you die, it's not your life.
Exactly. That's the point about suicide in the Bible. It's not your life to kill.
Right.
By the way, Ben Affleck played George Reeves in the movie Hollywoodland. And it says, George Reeves died of a gunshot wound to his head in the upstairs bedroom of his home in Benedict Canyon between 1:30 and 2 a.m. on June 16th. But later on, people said, many people have refused to believe he would kill himself and have pointed out that no gunpowder was found on the actor's skin from the gun's discharge, leading them to believe that the weapon was held from further away.
Could have been. So, who is this? I'm sorry, because I missed it.
George Reeves, Superman.
George Reeves,
terrified.
Superman.
It's possible. The forensics weren't as good, you know, back then. By the way, Brian Keith was the actor from Family Affair.
Family Affair, yeah, the dad.
Yeah. But the other thing, too, is I always say is that, you know, like, death is inevitable. You don't have to worry about killing yourself. It's going to take care of itself. The hard part is living. Try living. Try doing something positive and good because, you know, like, don't worry about killing yourself. It'll happen for you.
You're going to die anyway.
Yeah.
But people can save themselves 50, 60 good years. They could be in heaven for, you know, not heaven, but they could be in purgatory just waiting around. And that's much better than having to, you know, deal with the IRS.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome.
Well, too bad I'm not playing "This Is the End, My Only Friend, The End." Will you picture what will be so humanless and free? Okay, we're going to play John's song now. Good night, you guys. You did a good show tonight. Here comes Sorry.
All right, Sorry.
Sorry.
I'm never sorry.
I beg the difference.
I just beg.
Yeah.
Don hung up. He had to go to bed.
I'm sorry.
That was a good song. It's relevant to the tonight show. Do you have any final thoughts?
Don't kill yourself. If you have a rope around your neck and you're sitting on a chair, take it off. It's okay. Life is good. Wait till tomorrow. Think about things. It's going to be different. And no matter what you're going through, it may be overwhelming at the moment. It's just a momentary thing. And I think if you look at the bigger picture, take a step away. Take some time. Really think through stuff. Don't get overwhelmed in the moment. And that's something I try to learn, and that is stay as calm as you possibly can. We're in, some deep water in this world. And it's been dark before. There's a time period where men were just killing themselves, and God said, I'm going to just flood it and destroy it and start over again because just people are whack. And so it's been worse. There have been times, the dark ages, there's times in Rome where they just had these bread and circuses and the Colosseums and, people fighting to the death for entertainment, blood sport. I mean, those are some dark times. And those times are not gone. We still live in a world where that kind of stuff goes on. Human trafficking, even our professional sports, violence. Pro football is about aggression and really hurting the other person. And that's just a partial list. There's other things that go on, with S&M and bondage and other things, with torture. And our movie entertainment.
I forgot to mention, I hear, do you have, go ahead.
Go for it. No, go ahead.
No, the last two episodes we've had two live listeners and several archive listens, so there might be somebody listening tonight.
Definitely.
It won't tell me for a day and a half, though.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it's just one person and you're hearing this, and I'm sure whoever's savvy enough to tap into your website or your blog, they obviously are very aware of the Jim Carrey situation because it's bigger than life, what's on the news. So the point is, they've probably contemplated at some point. I think we all do. Random thought, I think Don talked about people that are just chronically, daily, they obsess about this. And there are people like that. But I think all of us at one time have had that random thought, just like, oh, I wish I was dead. Or it's kind of that feeling of escape, like you've totally blown it. You've screwed up on your job. You've messed up in your personal life. Maybe you've cheated, had an affair. Maybe you've lied and you've been caught. You've stolen something, whatever it is. And there's that feeling, I just want to go away. I want to click my heels and disappear. And it's not gonna. And that's not reality. And I think that's where people, they run into just this inescapable feeling. I just got to escape. They're suffocating, and suicide is an appealing route because it's unknown. We don't know what happens. And to that person, I would say, leave that door closed. And if you do explore it to its fullest level. In other words, think it all the way through. It doesn't just end like, oh, I killed myself and I'm dead. No, the implications, eternity, and the impact later on. People devastated, and they move on, but you don't. You have to deal with your consequences, and what if there are eternal consequences? When you start to really think it through, it's like, you know what? You're better than that. Life is to be lived, and there's a time and place for everything, but suicide, no. We don't need to go down that.
Yeah, and I just think of all those 150 people in the pews yesterday. They were all there because one man shot a girl, my son's sister.
Right.
How many lives he's impacted and how many tears that he shed.
And think about with those people that were gone, whether it's a 19-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 2-year-old, whatever. Think of all the effort, all the time, all the work to get that person to be an adult, right? I mean, you started with this child that's just basically a blob, you know, just a crying, you know, pooping, just needy person, totally helpless. And you watch them slowly. I mean, we have a neighbor with a 4-year-old, and just to watch every day, like, oh, he finally, he's crawling. And then, oh, he can walk. And now, oh, he can say no and walk away and do all these different things. It's like he's becoming a person. And one day it's like he's going to drive a car. He's going to have his first girlfriend. All that work, all that effort, and then just in one second of madness, gone. You know, years and years of work just annihilated because of just anger and darkness. And that's the kind of thing where it's like when you kill yourself, you take all that work that your mom and your family and society's put into you, and you just throw it out the door. And it's just something to really consider. You have value, and your life, you can at the very worst, you know, instead of killing yourself, dedicate yourself to helping someone. Go to a hospital with sick people that can't walk and that are bedridden. Devote yourself to doing some good and stop being so introspective about me, me, me. Think about other people. And you'll find, I think, in that exchange, it's like there's some value here. There's something important. And, you know, that's something I highly recommend.
Well, thanks for joining us. I'm fading, and I'm going to end the show.
It's that time. All
okay.
Good things must come to an
God
end.
God bless everybody. God bless America. Amen.
And put thy
good
holy
night.
Hammer down.
Good night.
Good night, America.